Hello and welcome to the Sobre Mesa podcast with me, your host, Alan Maguire. Today with me, I have Miguel Hurtado, who is a human rights activist and a clergy sex abuse survivor. Today, we're going to be talking about the recent report released by the Human Rights Commissioner, or the Ombudsman, translations not direct in from Spanish to English, and Ángel Gabilondo, who was appointed by the PSOE about 18 months ago, roughly, to do an investigation into this very matter, clergy sex abuse in Spain. And he has estimated that 440,000 people, so it's 1.13% of the adult population, are or have been victimized by the church. So, Miguel, what can you explain to us the background for the need of this report? And can you explain a bit, you know, what it means in this field?
Thanks, Alan, for having me here with you. So I think that this report, it can be viewed from different angles. And one important angle is that it kind of like certifies that Spain is not an exception. It's difficult to believe, but for a really, really long time, Spanish bishops, they were arguing that in Spain, kind of like the clergy sex abuse crisis had not been that bad as in other countries, you know, like Germany, Belgium, Canada, United States, Ireland. They were saying that we were an exception, you know, that there may have been a few isolated cases, but there was something in our culture, in our weather, whatever, that kind of immunized us against clergy predators. Well, kind of like the results of the report completely undermine that kind of like false narrative, you know? Spain not only has a problem, but is leading the pack. You know, it's kind of, it has become kind of like the country on earth with the most certified cases of clergy sex abuse, which is quite understandable and quite believable. Because first of all, Spain is quite a big country. It's like the sixth or the seventh biggest country regarding population in Europe. And second of all, historically, if you know a bit of history about Spain, kind of like the Catholic Church has had for a really long time quite a lot of power. You know, there was really during Franco's dictatorship for 40 years, there was no separation between church and state. And the church was given the monopoly of running a lot of institutions that cater for children. You know, they had the monopoly for education. They were running a lot of boarding schools. They were running a lot of seminaries, kind of like where children and adolescents attended. So as they were providing a lot of services for children, and as even legally, they had a special status where it was difficult to hold them accountable, you know, it was unfortunately the perfect recipe, you know, for high levels of clergy sex abuse. And that's what has actually happened.
What do you make of the figure? Because, I mean, this is, they've done something similar in France. I don't know if you can sort of explain how they sort of compile this report and what are some of the criticisms in the report as well?
So what happens is with kind of like sexual assault in general and child sex abuse specifically, you know, one of like the biggest difficulties is kind of like the hidden numbers, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like a theory of the iceberg, you know, only the tip of the iceberg is the one that is seen in the surface, but there's a lot of hidden abuse. People who don't want to talk about it, who don't want to disclose even to their family members, or they're kind of like close friends. So if you actually look at the official statistics, you know, people who press charges or who make a formal complaint, that's always going to be undercounting, significantly undercounting.
Yeah.
So you have to think, okay, what methods do I have to be able to actually measure the hidden abuse?
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the biggest number of victims. And kind of like one scientific methodology, it's kind of like the doing kind of like interviews with the general population, with a representative sample of the general population, you know? So for example, in Spain, what they have decided is we have a sample of 8,000 people who are representative of the Spanish population, and we interview them kind of like face-to-face or by phone, and we kind of like try to explore like different areas, and one of them is how many of them have been victims of clergy sex abuse. This methodology has been challenged, you know, by church defenders, because they say that the only numbers that count are kind of like the people who have pressed charges officially, and it's like 500 who actually went to the human rights commissioners and they told their story, you know, because they want kind of like to minimize the problem. What happens is you cannot measure public health problems if you don't use statistics and if you don't use representative samples of the population. For example, if you want to know the percentage of the population that smokes in Spain, you don't interview the 47 million Spanish people and ask them, do you smoke? You don't smoke? And then you get the number, you know? That would be impossible. You do need to get a representative sample.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why it has been so controversial, you know, is that Spanish authorities have done a horrible, horrible job for decades to actually fight against this public health problem. Yeah. The last interview that was done, you know, was done in 1996, wow. You know, almost 20 years or 30 years ago, you know, and it found a similar percentage of the population that had been kind of like abused. If the government, the Spanish government regularly, you know, had measured this problem, you know, as it was its obligation, these results would not have been so controversial, because we would have multiple samples telling kind of like the same story. And this method is very, very important because kind of like the Spanish society is trying to put in place laws and procedures to fight against child sex abuse. We need a way to measure if what we are trying to do is achieving its goal or not. And only if you measure the percentage of population that has been abused over the years, you will be able to see if the numbers are going up, down, or they remain the same. And that allows you to adjust your strategy to prevent this problem, you know? So it's kind of like quite scary that kind of Catholic fundamentalists, they are not only denying the problem, they have gone full on against science and the scientific method.
And what do you think of the criticisms that Ángel Gabilondo has put in the report? I mean, he's been quite critical of the church, right?
Not really. You know, I think it's kind of like very important to assess the report from two perspectives.
Uh-huh.
One is from the Spanish one, and the second is using an international standard.
Right.
As the church has been allowed to do whatever they want in Spain, you know, they have never been held accountable for any of their misdeeds, you know. Like the words of the human rights ombudsman seem quite harsh, you know, because it has never been done before.
Right.
But what you actually see what has been done in other countries, you know, where commissions of inquiry had more coercive powers, you see that in Ireland, the criticism was much, much stronger. The same in England, kind of like the same in kind of like Australia. And kind of like the key issue is the human rights ombudsman was not able to properly investigate the cover-up.
Right.
And that's the key to understand the scandal. You know, the problem, unfortunately, is not as simple as there have been some priests or a lot of them who have sexually abused children. The root of the scandal is the bishops knew it, and instead of calling the cops, they protected the abusers and they prevented the criminal justice system from investigating, and they shuffled the abuser from parish to parish, or they sent them to kind of Latin America. Oh, wow. That's the biggest scandal, the cover-up.
Yeah.
And the Human Rights Commission didn't have any strong investigative powers to actually get to the root of what had happened. For example, In the report, what they say is, we have not been able to access the internal church files, the canonical files. Why? Because there's a concordat. There's an international treaty between Spain and the Vatican that kind of shields, in theory, the archives from the intrusion of like the authorities.
Wow.
You know? So how can you investigate clergy sex abuse and actually not have access to the canonical files where a lot of these abuses are documented? And it shows you what the bishops knew, when they knew it, what they did, what they didn't do. Mm. You know, another thing that, for example, the kind of the Human Rights Commissioner has not done is when he receives a case and victims tell him, this was my abuser. He was a serial child abuser. Multiple people in my school or my parish were abused. We did tell the bishop, and the bishop, instead of calling the cops, they moved him away, you know? The logical bit would have been after that to go to kind of like the bishop and say, okay, what did you do? How did you handle, you know, and grill them and ask some tough questions.
Yeah.
If you cannot do it for all the cases for logistical reasons, what other commissions of inquiry like the Australian one or the British one have done is, okay, we select a few cases that are representative of the issue and we do special cases investigation. Mm. And the special cases investigations are open.
Right.
You know, for the public record.
Yeah.
And you have had the highest ranking authorities in Australia and kind of in the UK being grilled by the commission.
Right.
Here, that has not happened, you know. So it was a toothless investigation, and it was a bit of a whitewash. The only thing that they did was certifying that there's a problem with clergy sex abuse, but they don't investigate actually into the cover-up that is the most important bit.
Wow. And with regards to the church's reaction, what's that been like?
I mean, it's kind of like they are consistently appalling.
Yeah. You
know? It's kind of like their brand. So it has been kind of like more of the same. They are still denying the magnitude of the problem. Uh-huh. So you have kind of like the Cardinal of Barcelona, Omeya, who in theory is a bit more open-minded, is a bit more of a reformist, is kind of like the Pope Francis man in kind of like in Spain.
Okay.
Who actually denies the magnitude of the problem, you know, says that the numbers that the commission is using, like the 400,000 victims, it's not true. And that kind of journalists have acted in bad faith, extrapolating the percentages, because the report doesn't give that number. You know, what they do is 1.3% of the population has been abused in Catholic institutions. And then what kind of like the journalist did was say, okay, if there are so many million people over 18 in Spain at this point in time, if we extrapolate the numbers, this is the number of victims that we get. So what the bishops have said is the numbers are not true, and kind of the journalists have acted in bad faith. And it's the typical response they have been displaying for years and decades, that is, deny the problem, minimize the problem, shift the blame.
Yeah.
It's the journalists who are acting in bad faith. That's what they have been saying for such a long time. So that's really concerning, because if the first thing you need to do to solve a problem is actually admit that you have one.
Yeah.
And admit the magnitude of what has happened, you know? If you're still challenging kind of like the scientific method and you're challenging the data, how are you going to realistically address a huge, huge scandal that can destroy your credibility as an institution for generations to come?
Mm. I mean, we're talking about figures and cover-ups and things here, but there is also a very like real side to this, which you uncover in your documentary on Netflix. It's in English, it doesn't really make sense, examination of consciousness, but in Spanish, it's an expression, right? Examinación de conciencia. And you also explore in your book as well, Manual de Silencio. But, you know, I think one of the things that really is key to this, and you've mentioned it to me several times before, is the statute of limitations. And it kind of goes hand in hand with kind of human side of the story, why it's so important, I suppose, right? So could you explain to us what the statute of limitations is?
Yeah. So in the world, there are like two main types of legal systems. One is common law countries, you know, Ireland, kind of like England, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, United States, and the other are like civil law countries that usually are more European ones or Latin American ones. And one of like the biggest difference is that common law countries, most of them, apart from the states, usually have not had the statute of limitations. What it means is there's no arbitrary deadline to prosecute crimes. You know, if you kind of commit the murder and you're caught kind of like 40 years after the crime, you will still be prosecuted. And if there's enough evidence to convince kind of like the courts beyond a reasonable doubt, you will be sentenced.
Yeah.
But that's not how civil law countries work, like Germany or France or Belgium or Spain. In our countries, there are arbitrary deadlines, you know, after which, you know, no matter how strong the evidence, no matter whether the abuser confesses the crime, or there's DNA evidence, or there's a recording, or there's documents, whatever, you know, and the state gives up on the right to punish wrongdoing, you know? And for most crimes, it makes sense. You know, it's kind of imagine that somebody 2 decades ago had the drug abuse problem and was stealing, you know, to fund their habits, you know?
Yeah.
And they are caught after years and they have recovered and they have got into rehab, you know, and it doesn't make sense now to send them to prison for crimes they committed kind of ages ago and they have reformed themselves. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So for a lot of crimes, they actually make sense. But for child abuse statute of limitations, what it makes is it decriminalizes, you know, most of the abuse that happens. Because for a variety of reasons, children find it very, very, very difficult to talk about the abuse straight away.
Yeah.
Just after they happen. You know, there are so many barriers, you know, kind of like social barriers, interpersonal barriers, internal barriers that kind of like make it almost kind of like impossible. You know, they don't understand what has happened because the mind of a child doesn't work the same as the mind of an adult. They feel ashamed. They feel guilty. They think that they have done something wrong. They are afraid of the consequences for their family. It's kind of like the family going to break up. They are afraid because the abuser has threatened them. So sometimes they do disclose, and then the response of like the people around them, you know, as like the abuse is often committed by somebody who is within the circle of trust, is kind of like the response is not really good. You know, they try to preserve the institution and hush up kind of what has happened, you know? So for all these reasons, and what the scientific evidence shows is that there's a phenomenon, a very common phenomenon that delayed disclosure. Mm-hmm. For most child sex abuse victims, it takes decades to build up the courage to process the trauma, verbalize it, recreate the story of what has happened to you, and make a formal complaint. By the time you do that, the statute of limitations has run out. So there's nothing you can do against your abuser.
Yeah.
And the problem is that it's not only an injustice towards victims, but it endangers the new generations because as they cannot be prosecuted and convicted, they are not added to the child sex abuse offenders registry, so they can have access, direct and permanent access to children without problem because they pass all criminal background checks. So they can keep abusing, you know, new children.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really loophole in our child protection laws. So for example, in the Netflix documentary Examination of Conscience, what it happens is that we kind of like interview plenty of clergy sex abuse survivors who playing the toll that abuse has had in their lives, you know, kind of like the consequences. And they are horrifying cases. And in most of them, it was not possible to convict kind of like the abuser, despite the fact that there was, in some cases, overwhelming evidence. For example, there was one case in which kind of like the priest, the pedophile priest, not only abused kids at his school, but he also kind of like recorded it.
Oh, wow.
And kind of like when his superiors discovered that, they moved him to other schools in Spain. And finally, they moved him kind of like to Chile. And in kind of like 2012, 2013, he was caught in Chile, kind of like using child sex abuse material that he had recorded about his own victims. So the Chilean justice kind of like investigated. And in the end, he was only convicted for possession of child sex abuse material. But despite the fact that there was evidence, graphic evidence of the abuse he had committed against children, he was not convicted for these child sex abuse offenses because the statute of limitations had run out. So even if it's recorded, you know, if the statute of limitations has run out, there's nothing you can actually do. In another case, in examination of conscience, you had kind of like one of the abusers who actually confessed on camera how he had been abusing kids for decades. Because of the statute of limitations, he was only convicted because for 3-4 abuses against children, for the abuses he committed against 3 or 4 victims. But for the other 12 cases, the statute of limitations has run out, nothing that can be done. So kind of these cases have really shocked kind of like a Spanish society and opened a very strong and heated debate about whether laws are working or not. In 2021, the government and parliament amended the law, giving survivors 17 more years to press charges.
So what was it before? Sorry. What was it before?
Before, the way it worked is the statute of limitations was suspended until the victim reached the age of majority. You know, when you are attacked and you are abused, it doesn't count, the statute of limitations. The clock does not start ticking.
Uh-huh.
Then wait until you are 18, your age of majority. In theory, you are better able to make this kind of decisions.
And how long was the statute of limitations from 18?
It depended on the severity of the crime, you know. The minimum was 5 years. So there were cases in which the statute of limitations ran out when the victim was 23 years old.
Jesus.
And the maximum was 20 years. So in the past, you know, kind of after you were 38 years old, there was nothing you could do without against your abuser, no matter the evidence. That was changed. You know, the government and parliament decided to give survivors 70 more years. So with current law, all victims have at least until they are age 40 to press charges. And in very, very, very serious cases, even after they reach age 55, you know? But after age 55, nothing that can be done. With the report, you know, and kind of like the shocking numbers that have been published, the debate has been reopened again, you know? And currently, kind of in Catalonia, the regional parliament is working on a law that will be sent to Madrid, you know, in kind of like in February 2024, if everything goes right, in which it will either abolish kind of the statute of limitations for the most serious crimes or significantly kind of like extend them. And this kind of what has happened in Spain, it happens in a lot of countries. There's kind of incremental changes, incremental progress. So countries realize their laws are really not fit for purpose. So they expand the limitation period a little bit. Then they realize that it's not enough because there are some shocking cases that put the issue in the spotlight again. and they keep increasing it until they abolish it kind of like completely. And at the moment, worldwide, both in Europe and Latin America and English-speaking countries, there's a very strong movement to either significantly expand or abolish kind of like a statute of limitations. There's actual currently in the world like 32, 33 countries that have actually done that.
Oh, wow.
Including most of the countries in Northern Europe.
What about with regards to compensation? Because I remember reading something in the report, it suggested that the state should pay compensation. But is that partly or true? And like, what is currently the state of compensation? I mean, it's kind of a difficult subject, right?
Yeah, it's a very important topic, not only in Spain, but every country that has grappled with child sex abuse scandals. How do you compensate the victims? Can the victims even be compensated?
Yeah.
So is there anything you can do to kind of erase the pain of child sex abuse? And there are kind of like different things that you can try to do. One very important thing is compensation includes, but it's not limited to, financial compensation. You know, a lot of times survivors, they do need the financial compensation because they have really high therapy costs and it has affected them use their earning potential. Yeah, they were not able to study as much as they would have wanted to. They don't have good jobs in a lot of cases. But financial compensation is not enough. You know, survivors also need and want symbolic compensation.
Yeah.
So actions that actually establish as the official truth that what happened to them, you know, did indeed happen and was morally wrong, you know, and that the institutions and the society let them down, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a combination of financial compensation and symbolic compensation. And it's the whole package. One without the other doesn't work out. Regarding the financial compensation, there are different ways in which you can do it. One of the most effective way is using the courts, you know? And with the statute of limitations, there are statute of limitations for criminal cases, basically to send somebody to jail. But there are also statute of limitations for civil cases.
Oh, wow.
Which you can sue your abuser or you can sue the institution where the abuse happened and ask them for financial compensation, you know? With criminal cases, even if you abolish statute of limitations, it cannot be done retroactively. What that means is it will protect future generations. It works for the future, but not for the past. It doesn't affect adult survivors. With civil statute of limitations, you can actually do it retroactively. So you empower adult survivors in the here and now, you know, to sue the institutions where the abuse happened if they are not willing to kind of like pay compensation for the abuse they suffered, you know? So that's one area or that's one legal reform that you can put in place. That's what has been recommended in Canada. That has been done in Australia, in a lot of US states, and even in England, the Commission of Inquiry, that was one of the recommendations, you know? Abolish retroactively the civil statute of limitations so victims can sue in court. Unfortunately, the Tory government is dragging their feet and they don't want to put that recommendation into practice. So that's one way. And then the second way is, okay, forget about the courts. You know, they take really long. They are very expensive. You need to hire a lawyer. Let's try to find an arbitration model, you know, an out-of-court administrative process. And that's what, for example, they have done in Ireland, you know?
Okay.
So you set up a commission that's kind of like independent, that reviews the cases, that decides whether kind of like the facts have kind of like some credibility. They use a standard of evidence that is lower than in the courts, you know, because kind of like the their concern is not paying compensation. It's kind of like avoiding to pay compensation to somebody who does not deserve it. Their main concern is that no survivor kind of is denied the compensation they need, you know? And then usually you have kind of like a compensation scheme. And depending on the characteristics of the features of the views, how long it happened, how severe it is, whether there was rape or not, whether there was violence, kind of like the consequences in the victim's life, based on a lot of like these parameters, your rate's kind of like a number, you know? So that's kind of how it works. And what kind of like the High Commissioner has recommended is that the church and the state jointly, they should set up this administrative kind of like body to compensate victims out of court, you know? And as a plan B, if the church does not agree to pay compensation through this mechanism, that the state should be the one to set it up and kind of like the money come from the state coffers.
Uh-huh.
The rationale for that is that according to the commissioner, not only the church, you know, has committed some wrongdoing, not following the law, but also there has been kind of like a state responsibility, you know, because according to a judgment, CAFE against Ireland, that was issued by the European Court of Human Rights, if the state does not properly supervise institutions, especially schools, kind of like that attend children and abuses rampant in these institutions, there's a state responsibility because of the failure of supervision, the failure to put effective measures in place to protect children from harm. So because of that, the ombudsman says not only the church has responsibility, the state also has it. For this reason, if the church doesn't pay, the state should do so.
Does that kind, like, I understand the rationale, and I think it's, you know, it makes sense when you say it like that. But do you think, is there a chance that that would let the church off?
Yeah, and that's the risk. I mean, you could understand the legal rationale, you know, but how are you going to prevent abuse in the future if the institutions that have enabled it, that have cover up for it, don't pay compensation? So that's a moral hazard. You know, there's no cost for abuse. There's no financial price to pay. So because of that, there should be mechanisms, legal mechanisms, to make sure that it's the church, the one who pays. One mechanism would be to retroactively abolish the civil statute of limitations, because what that would do is would empower survivors.
Yeah.
You know, they would be in a stronger negotiating position. They would be able to go to the institutions where the abuse happened and say, look, if you don't fairly compensate me, see you in court.
Yeah. You
know? That's kind of like one way to do that. And another way to do that is kind of like the appallingly kind of there's a certain percentage of income tax that if you decide that you want to donate it to the church every year, it goes to the church.
Yeah.
So basically, Catholics are funding their church with public funds. Something that the government could say is, I don't care whether you agree to pay or not, I'm going to still set up this administrative kind of like compensation mechanism, you know, and the money that's allocated from to victims, I'm going to deduct it from your income taxes. So instead of giving you 300 million euros kind of every year, it's going to be 100 million, you know, because 200 million are going to be used to pay compensation to victims. And kind of like this is kind of really, really, really important, because something similar happened in Ireland, you know.
Oh, really?
They were like public institutions run by the church. And in the end, in Ireland, most of the tax was paid by the state 1 billion euros have been paid from state coffers, you know? So we run the risk in Spain of not only having bailed out the bankers, you know, the bankers, now we may bail out the bishops.
Looks like we're going to have another PSOE government for 4 years. Well, not maybe not 4 years, but because they've recently done a law, which you said extended the statute of limitations, are you hopeful for more progress on this issue with a possible government that we might have?
Well, I think they will have no other option, you know, than to pass kind of like some legal reform, you know, because kind of what the scandal has shown is that there are still very, very, very significant gaps in the Spain's child protection system. You know, kind of access to justice is a big issue. For example, they did extend the criminal statute of limitations, but surprisingly, they didn't touch the civil statute of limitations. What does that mean? That kind of if you are abused in an institution and your abuser dies, so you cannot press criminal charges against him, you're screwed, you know, because you cannot go through the civil courts to sue the institution where kind of like the abuse kind of happened. So that's a very, very big problem. Another big problem is in this child protection law, they set up some standards that most institutions have to follow, education system, the care system, sports, but they left out religious institutions.
Oh, really?
It's as if abuse in religious institutions, not only Catholic, Protestant, Jewish institutions, Muslim, it's as if they didn't exist.
Wow.
That shows you how much power the church has had in Spain over the years. The flagship child protection law in 2022 left out churches.
Jesus. And what do you see this report having a bigger impact in the long term as well? What sort of thing can we expect?
Yeah, I think kind of like this report is not going to age out well.
Right.
Because there's kind of this report has, well, sorry, I will qualify this opinion. This report has two parts. One part was completed by psychologists.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like the qualitative interviews of 500 victims. It's kind of like the survey with a representative sample. That bit is top-notch. It's very, very high quality.
Yeah.
So that one is going to stand the test of time.
Uh-huh.
The problem is the report has also a legal part, but it's perhaps the most important one, where it kind of like makes proposals to ensure that victims have access to trust, justice, reparation, and guarantees of no repetition, you know? And that part of the report is really, really, really weak, you know? Their main recommendation is kind of like a state-funded compensation system. Mm-hmm. That's going to be very controversial, you know, because even they set up Spanish, a significant part of the Spanish population is going to say, why on earth we have to pay the bill for the bishop's wrongdoing?
Yeah.
And another very strong recommendation from the report is restorative justice, you know? So basically that outside of the justice system, that you set up a system by which kind of victims can be repaired by their abusers and the institutions where that happened through meetings, talks, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. That's very, very kind of like unrealistic in clergy sex abuse cases because it's an abuse of power.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that means that it may be unsafe, you know, for the victims to go through a restorative justice process. And kind of like the institutions where that happened, they are not going to want to acknowledge the truth.
Yeah.
The abuse, but also the cover-up, you know? So it's very ideological in the sense that the lawyers or the law professors write in the report, they are strong believers in restorative justice. They don't believe so much in the criminal justice system. So they are trying to use our stories, our dramas to further their political agenda, you know? Yeah. That's not going to work in practice.
And what about with regards to the statute of limitations? What does the report suggest there?
Yeah, and that's the reason why it's kind of like so underwhelming, is they don't make a recommendation. They don't endorse kind of like the idea, you know? And they are not even honest, intellectually honest, you know? Instead of saying, we don't believe in that measure, what they say is that the statute of limitations cannot be modified retroactively. So they have to focus on compensating and restoring the victims in the here and now. So they have focused their recommendations on this area, you know, on compensating the victims now. But that if the government decides kind of like to change the law, many victims will see it as a guarantee of no repetition. So that's kind of like not understanding anything. You know, if victims in Spain have come forward, if we have told our stories, it's not because we want some money, you know. We do it because we may want to make sure that this will never, ever happen again. And one important piece of legal reform that will guarantee that this never, ever happens is abolition of statute of limitations. And even though we, adult survivors, won't benefit directly from kind of this law reform, emotionally, it would be incredibly, extremely restorative. And it would be symbolic kind of reparation, you know? Because our stories, the injustice we have suffered, would help to ensure that future generations are better protected. And it was not included in the report, unlike what has happened kind of like in Australia, what has happened in United Kingdom, what happened with the Jury Grant report in Pennsylvania. So it's underwhelming. So I think something that I think it's important to highlight, you know, is that kind of like this report, even though it's kind of quite underwhelming, it's watered down version, it took 5 years.
Right.
To reach that point, because El País started the investigation in 2018. And we don't have the reports until 2023. So it took 5 years. So I think it's very important to highlight that kind of like institutions where these abuses happen, a lot of times they have the attitude that it will pass away. You know, if I don't do nothing, you know, it will eventually disappear from the media, you know, but that's not how it works. You know, it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts. What you are doing is prolonging the agony. So the better option is actually address the problem head on from the beginning, solve it quickly.
All right. Well, thank you for your time again.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Alan, for having me here.